Technorama episode 586, our first show of the year. Hey, welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, well, it's 2020. That's all I got to say. We've been doing this since 2015. You got a little catching up to do if you want to get back. This is 586. Wasn't that what the Pentium was supposed to be called?
I guess.
Did I say 2020?
Sure. Yeah, it's 2020.
We've been going since 2005. Mrs. Technorama corrected me.
Yeah, 2005.
We've done 15 years of this podcast. That's what I meant to say. It just came out a little sideways.
Hey, wait a minute. That means this year, about probably June, July or so, we're going to hit 600.
Yes, I've been kind of doing the math. We've been doing about 35 shows, between 30 and 35 a year. So It'll be in the April, May, June timeframe. So stick with us. Show 600 is coming up soon.
Now, if we do one a month, one a week, or one a day. There you go.
Let's do a dog days of nothing.
We'll just get on. And
Dog Days of Technorama.
Yeah.
Dog Days of Technorama. And I know there are some of you out there that have been listening since the early days of 2005. Thank you very much for being with us. My name is Chuck Tomasi, by the way, from Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, yeah.
And joining me right across there, if you're watching the video or if you're listening on your audio headphone device, is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing good. I survived the holidays. It looks like you did as well.
I did as well. There's even more of me to love than there was before the holidays.
Oh, really?
Got a couple pounds to take off before that cruise. Star Trek cruise coming up.
You better hurry up because there's plenty of opportunity to go shirtless there. So,
yeah, we're not going to talk about that.
What did I post? I posted that on Facebook. Summer bodies are made in the winter. So you better hurry up.
I'm fine with it. I just need a fine tuning. Hey, we've got some feedback this week. Let's play that lovely music.
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get letters every day. Skype lag.
Reach right out and pull one out.
I love those letters. Let's find out what you got to say.
Oh boy.
There you go. Hey, I was actually listening to our last episode in the car, and I was like, I'm going to try and sing that song ahead of itself. It's kind of hard to do. Yeah, good luck with that. I was going to pre-lag.
As many times as we've heard that, we probably could.
I was going to pre-lag it.
We have a voicemail from Gary, longtime listener and Patreon person.
Hey, hey, Technorama.
Yeah.
This is Gary, and I hope everyone's having a great holiday season. I was traveling, so I think I missed a show, but if we're still talking about geek child names, I managed to pull off not quite the trifecta, but close. My son's name is Clark, and my daughter's name is Diana. My wife informed me that we will not be having any children, so my hopes to have the third one be Bruce is completely not going to happen. That's about it. Guys, have a happy new year. Bye.
Could have had a daughter named Robin.
You can always consider adoption.
I like how he said that too. My wife has informed me we will not be having any more children.
It's like he's been trying. I've been trying to ask her, hey, by the way, you know, I'm going to see Gary. I know I mentioned this on the Topic of Trek. If you don't listen to that podcast, go check us out over there. But
over where? You got to say the site so I can do that.
Yeah, I'm going over to the Topic of Trek.com. And I am going to Kingsland, Georgia on January 18th. I think it's the Nebula Studios. They renamed it Nebula Studios, where they filmed the Star Trek Continues, the fan film series that did the fifth, the mythical fifth year of the Enterprise.
Sure.
In the original series. Anyway, so Gary's going to be there, and myself and my buddy Fred are going down. They're having fan days, where you can go and basically tour the whole thing for free. And they'll have some people there that were in the fan film, the fan series, excuse me.
And you so do it's going to be a lot of dance?
Fun. I do my fan dance. So anyway, I was trying to figure out what I'm going to wear. I wanted to get like a TOS shirt or something, but I don't know. The ones on Amazon are like crap, and I don't know if I feel like trying to dig through eBay and hope somebody give me one. So I may just wear a Topicus Trek shirt.
There you go.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with a little self-promotion.
No, I'll be like, no. I'm looking forward to it. I've got my camera ready, trying to plan out how I'm going to shoot everything. I'm going to have a good time.
All right. We also have another one. I think this was in response to our request for a little quips. At least I hope it was.
Quips.
You know, for a podcast, I expected much more discussion about peas.
Peas. Pod. Get it? Peas in a pod. I'm guessing that was also Gary.
No, it didn't sound like Gary.
Not at all. It was Larry from a state that rhymes with Florida.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Larry.
Thank you very much. We're going to put that in our collection somewhere among our quips because we also have this one.
Yeah, I think it's time to get off the podcast.
Whatever you're on, cut the dose. Yeah. I'm on podcasts.
So much for celebrating the 15th year.
And
time to get off.
And let's call it a night. We now have our question of the week that we asked on social media. Well, namely Facebook yesterday. What can't you believe still exists in 2020? And man, we got a lot of answers to this one. There was no shortage once again. I'm having an issue with Facebook scrolling here for a second. Okay. Let me just pick some of the highlights. Evan Small says 32-bit operating systems. I can still believe they exist in 2020.
Yeah, look at the Raspberry Pi. Right. Is that 60? That's 32-bit, isn't it?
I don't know, but if you could even go smaller processors than that.
Yeah, right.
Mike Will says cars that drive on asphalt. He wanted the flying cars, I'm presuming. The throwback to that question about what actually, did you expect would exist by this time.
Actually, between your thread and mine, that was a commonality, is the swooshy cars.
Brad Miller says paper greeting cards. I think somebody even said, Paul Berg says a rotary telephone. Kent Mikely has a fax machine. He just put a picture of it, a fax machine. Then we got people that went off the technology path and said things like racism. I agree.
Yeah.
Hate was another one that my sister sent in there. This guy named Craig Stepp says pencils. He can't believe pencils still exist. Hey, Craig.
They have their place. They have their place. Actually, they're a great artist tool, so I shouldn't have said that.
There were, of course, some political discussions in here. Mike Smith says people using AOL.
AOL email. I think I got AOL email addresses was one. Yep.
Did you have, Kathy says, the unknown, quote, stuff in my freezer. I can't believe it still exists in 2020.
Whoa. Yeah, right.
What sort of oddities did you have in your thread?
Well, we had racism and various political things. And then we had AOL email addresses, as I just mentioned, gas engines.
Yep.
My buddy Rob Simpson says non-gluten-free edible underwear.
You can't believe it exists in 2020?
Or still exists. That's right.
It still exists.
Yeah. Hate and racism again. Cars that don't fly. Car accidents, Gary says, but we're only a few years away from that being virtually ceasing.
I would debate that, but okay.
Yeah, maybe a few more years than that, but... let's see, cable TV and actual cash money.
Actual cash money. Hey, that's how I give my landscaper guy his bonus in actual cash money. That way he doesn't have to report it.
Yeah, well, that's the way you should tip, you know, most of the time.
Right.
If you can.
Alrighty. Thank you, everybody, for those comments. We will be sending out another one next week. We'll announce it at the end of the show, so stick around.
I was going to say, we're sending it out now, sort of. In a little bit.
We'll see what exists in 2020 next
What
week.
Are you looking forward to in 2021?
Do we yeah. Let's do the history thing.
All right.
There's nobody in the studio, so we don't have to roll for this one.
Oh.
On this day in history for January 8th, 2020, this is the eighth day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 358, because this is a leap year. That's going to add up to 366 days this year. 358 days remaining in 2020. It was on this date in 1790 that George Washington delivers the first State of the Union address in New York City.
And it was also on this date in 1828 that the Democratic Party of the United States is organized.
January 8th, 1835, the United States national debt is zero for the first and only time. That's sad.
Had been there a long time. That's right. It was also on this date in 1889, Herman Hollerith was issued the U.S. patent 395791 for the art of applying statistics. His punch card calculator, and there you go. Chuck's demonstrating there.
Thank you, Herman. Thank you for the punch cards. Oh, there's a bug in my code.
Hey, oddly visual.
Oddly that little that temporary tattoo was in there.
That's funny.
Where were we? Soviet space mission Luna 21 is launched on this date in 1973.
And it was 39 years ago today that a local farmer reports a UFO sighting in Trans-le-Provence in France, claimed to be perhaps the most completely and carefully documented sighting of all time.
Okay. January 8th, 1982, AT&T agrees to divest itself of 22 subdivisions as part of the breakup of the Bell system. Part of my ancient career is tied to that decision.
Ancient being the operative word there.
Yes.
And it was also on this date in 1994 that Russian cosmonaut Valery Polyakov on Soyuz TM-18 leaves for Mir. He would stay on the space station until March 22nd, 1995 for a record 437 days in space.
Imagine what it did to his bone density.
Well, there's a documentary about the brothers, anyway, we'll talk about it in a minute.
Happy birthday goes out of this day to German astronomer and academic Johannes Fabricius, born on this date in 1587.
And Frank Nelson Doubleday, the American publisher, founded the Doubleday Publishing Company, was born 158 years ago today.
He was related to Abner Doubleday, the baseball guy, right?
Sure, let's go with that.
As Ben and Keith would say, it's a known fact.
Yes, a known fact.
German physicist and academic Nobel Prize laureate, Walter Booth was born 129 years ago today.
Booth. William Hartnell, the English actor, was born 112 years ago today.
Doctor Who number one.
Yes, that's right.
Born July 8th, 1911, American actress, dancer, and author Gypsy Rose Lee.
And German-American computer scientist and author Joseph Weizenbaum was born on this date in 1923.
You have to say it with the German accent. Josef
Weizenbaum. Yeah.
There you go.
Weizenbaum!
Wurmstrom. Weizenbaum.
Weizenbaum.
American singer, guitarist, and actor Elvis Presley was born 85 years ago. He'd be 85 today. Oh, my gosh.
I never heard of that. I never heard of him.
Nope.
American game show host and producer Bob Eubanks is 82 today.
Still alive. Good for him. Graham Chapman, the English actor and screenwriter, was born the same date in 1941.
Unfortunately, not alive anymore. And born January 8th, 1942, English physicist and author Stephen Hawking.
Also not alive anymore.
Also not alive anymore.
Listener birthdays who we hope are alive today.
Yes.
For January 1st through 14th. Is Thomas Gideon on the 3rd? We missed him because we didn't have a show back then.
He is kicking, by the way.
Is he still doing the Command Line podcast?
I don't know if he's doing that so much, but he is opening a brewery.
That'll work.
Yeah.
Podcasting and brewing. It goes together. Right. Steve Therrien on the 6th. Elvis on the 8th. We already mentioned that. Lingo from the Britain Yankee Pubcast. On the 9th and on the 14th is longtime listener Glenn Tolar. Thank you very much to all of you. If you want to be on the birthday calendar, you can go over to chuckchat.com/wiki. Get your name on there. If it's your birthday and you're not on the calendar, We wish you all the best this week. And we'll give you a shout out next time around. Or if your birthday is next week, hurry up. Go do that.
Go register quick.
That's the way it was on this day in history for January 8th, 2020. I'm going to have to learn to say that. It's just not rolling off the tongue yet.
2020.
It's no longer 2000 and something, because it was, you know, you had a choice whether it was 2019 or 2019.
It is easier to say 2020.
It is than to say 2020.
It's too many syllables.
Well, 2000. Anyway, whatever. Thank you very much. We're going to fade out the music then. Bye, Ben.
Bye. See you later, Ben.
Bum, 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 bum. Hit the abort button and they're gone. All right. The news.
Oh, great news, everyone.
Yes, I think this is great news. We have a planet that is pretty much in our backyard, almost. Astronomers have found an Earth-sized planet practically, quote, next door to us from sciencealert.com. Our neighborhood in space is turning out to be quite the populous planet precinct. Astronomers have found a new exoplanet just a little bigger than the Earth, orbiting a red dwarf star just 66.5 light years away. Hey, just across the street, practically. It's an excellent candidate, they say, to help fill our vast knowledge gap about the small rocky planet population in our Milky Way galaxy. Our detection ability and knowledge of exoplanets was practically exploded since they were first discovered. The first discovery was published in 1992. At time of this writing, over 4,100 exoplanets have been confirmed in our galaxy, and we now have a much deeper understanding of planetary systems and how they form and evolve. But since we're looking for small, dim, or dark things that are very hard to see from a distance, naturally, most of the confirmed exoplanets are the chonkers. Ice and chonkers. Gas giants the size of Neptune and above. The Kepler exoplanet hunting missions, and now TESS have been increasing the number of detections of smaller exoplanets, those around the mass of the Earth or Venus, and therefore likely to be rocky rather than gaseous. That's one of the prerequisites for life as we know it. But according to the international team led by astrophysicist Avi Sporer of MIT's Kavli Institute for Astrophysics and Space Research, these rocky planets are hard to measure and hard to characterize. That's because we don't often find them around stars that are bright enough to allow for detailed follow-up investigations. That's why the discovery of this new exoplanet is so cool. The team's paper has been uploaded to ARXIV, A-R-X-I-V. I'm sure it stands for something very clever, and is yet to be peer-reviewed, but the results are tantalizing to say the least. Quote, here we present the discovery of GJ-1252b, a small planet orbiting an M dwarf. The planet is initially discovered as a transiting planet candidate using test data. Based on the test data and additional follow-up data, we are able to reject all false positive scenarios showing it a real planet, not just a wooden boy. GJ-1252b is around 1.2 times the size of the Earth and around twice Earth's mass, so a bit denser than our home planet. It's orbiting a red dwarf star called GJ-1252. Duh, that's why it's called GJ-1252b, which is a little scrap of a thing around 40% the size and mass of the sun. So there we go. We've got one. The article continues on with more information that we invite you to read and review and contemplate and comment on over at chuckchat.com/technorama on episode 586. There we are.
See, when I read about something like that, I think about, it was in...
You think about moving?
Dr. Michio Kaku's book. No. In Dr. Michio Kaku's book, when he's talking about the micro satellites or probes, where you would... It'd be very small and easy to shoot, I guess, either with some gravity assist or whatever, propulsion be solar really beams. Easy to push it.
Yep.
Yeah, you can get that over there and start taking pictures, I guess that'd be awesome, but trying to get close to it. But I know it'd take a while, especially
it would take a while 66. To get there, and it would take 66 years to get the pictures back.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. We got to start somewhere, right?
Yep. And interesting to see if they find any signs of an atmosphere or possibility of life on planets like that. We're going to, with Kepler and TESS, we are going to learn a lot more very soon.
See, it'd be cool if we had, like, not an army of them, that's not the right word, but like a horde of like little satellites that are ready to go. And as soon as they see something that's a, you know, it's a good candidate for life or something that's interesting to, you know, to mm-hmm. peer on, you know, send it. Just shoot it off, ready to go. I don't know.
There's one.
Yeah.
There's one.
Well, I mean, well, obviously they can identify them pretty quick. We've got 4,100. Why not send some little satellites out?
Could do that. You going to fund that project?
Sure.
Okay.
Let me get my checkbook out. I'll tell Kim.
Let's do other space, cool space news.
All right. More cool space news. Reports from around the world. I'm sorry. Reporters from around the world. Reports from around the world. They get to take a look at the Mars 2020 mission rover at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Ooh.
And there is a picture in the article. You can go check it out. But the Mars, and you probably see it on this video.
Yep.
Donna, the Mars 2020 mission rover is set to launch from the Kennedy Space Center in July. But excitement is already starting to build for the NASA's 2.5 billion, which will continue to explore the potential for life on the red planet. On Friday, more than 50 journalists from around the world donned protective suits, hoods, booties, you know, just because they wanted to look cool, before entering the clean room at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in La Canada for Flint Ridge, which got a glimpse of the 7-foot-high, 9-foot-wide, and 10-foot-long robot rover.
That's roughly the same size as Curiosity, so it's the size of a pretty decent-sized car.
Yeah, I mean, you can see a guy standing beside it, and I could see a couple people. Yeah, it could fit 4 people, kind of a car. Yeah, get in. But you know what's funny is you see these rovers, and you don't realize they're actually that big. They look smaller.
Well, some of the original ones weren't that big. The later ones. No. Curiosity's big.
Yeah. No, but I mean, just looking at the pictures, you don't realize how big it is.
Uh-huh.
But when you see this, you go, oh, that's what they're putting on the planet. Yeah, the first rovers were, they looked a little bit bigger than a shoebox, but they didn't seem like much bigger than that. But anyway, Ben Riggs, a mechanical engineer working on the rover, said the vehicle will remain protected throughout its shipment to Cape Canaveral. It's always encased, Riggs said, except for when they show it off to journalists. But when the vehicle gets moved, it gets on a flat truck bed and has been specially modified to handle the vehicle. It is normally stowed a little bit more compact and effectively double bagged. A double bag. But anyway, this is exciting. I knew the rover was coming. I didn't realize they were going to launch it so quick in July. So I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Awesome. Yes, I am looking forward to seeing that.
Oh, look, if you look to the side.
Yes.
There's a picture of the rover. If you look to the right, isn't that the lander, the part that lowers it down?
You look to the right. Are you looking at the margin on the right of this where the advertisements go?
No, in the picture, yes. There's the rover, and to the right a little bit, there's like a, looks like a cage almost.
Looks like a gray cabinet for instrumentation.
Like, not a little bit more, Chuck.
The long table. Oh, that, yes, that's probably your skyhook.
There's a cabinet.
You said right next to it. That's not next to it. That's like 20 feet away.
It's a whole other unit. Right there.
Yes.
Anyway, it looks like that's the
skyhook
like
thing.
A sky crane.
Yeah.
I guess they're trying to land it the same way they did the previous one. Anyway.
All right.
It's exciting stuff.
It is. We have other interesting news that you probably wouldn't think about. So we have to go into our Hacks and Strange Stories segment.
Ooh.
Ooh, yes, because we have The Bizarre Science of Memory. This is a rather lengthy article, so I'm not going to read the whole thing to you. But in what I got out of it was scientists have been curious how our memory is stored. And the reason we want to know this is so when you get degenerative things like Alzheimer's, we can start working on possible repairs for that.
Or maybe brain injuries just in general.
Yep. So they used to think that it was in the synaptic connections and now they're saying, or in the nerves, they're saying now it's more like it's in the nucleus of the nerves.
Hmm.
Because they did a scientific experiment years ago with planaria, you know, those little flatworms that you could cut and they grow and turn into more planaria.
Yeah.
you could quite literally cut the head off and it would grow a new body and the body would grow a new head. And this scientist did an experiment with light and electroshock to train the worms to avoid the light. So that when they just turned on the light, they went, oh no, I'm going to get a shock.
Yeah.
Then they cut this worm in half and the bottom half grew a new top. The top half grew a new bottom. And both of them knew how to reject the, they would flinch when the light went on. That's kind of weird because one of these guys didn't have a brain. It had to grow a whole new brain. So where are these memories coming from?
Hmm.
Yeah. So there's been other scientists that have taken this on with other animals, you know, usually something primitive like these worms, but they're starting to understand. Let me find out if I can find this. So if memories aren't stored in synaptic connections where we once thought they were, where are they stored instead? Glanzman's unpopular hypothesis was that they might reside in the nucleus of the neuron cell where DNA and RNA sequences compose instructions for life processes. DNA sequences are fixed and unchanging, so most of an organism's adaptability comes from supple epigenetic mechanisms, which I have no idea what that means, but I'm sure somebody much smarter than me listening to this show probably does.
Maybe.
They're the processes that regulate gene expression in response to environmental cues and pressures, which sometimes involve RNA. If DNA is printed sheet music, RNA-induced epigenetic mechanisms are like improvisational cuts and arrangements that might conduct learning and memory. So perhaps memories reside in epigenetic changes induced by RNA. Again, they're doing research into this, and they did one on butterflies as well. So they said, hey, if we can train this caterpillar to have some kind of thing like, hey, let's make it averse to ethyl acetate. And the caterpillars were... Then the caterpillar goes into its cocoon, turns into a butterfly, and what happens in there is it's pretty much broken down into soup to turn into a butterfly. It's not like, oh, the eyes go over here and the legs turn into legs for the caterpillar and the back grows wings.
It does more than morph.
Yeah. It is a true metamorphosis. And they said, well, if it's all broken down and it literally has to grow a new brain and rewire that brain, where are the memories coming from? Because the butterfly also had memories of this ethyl acetate aversion. So it's really kind of cool where they're going with this. And go, well, maybe it wasn't what we thought.
I wish people would do that, work that way.
Have memories?
No. Remember, pass them on to their children, not... Sometimes I've seen a lot of people make the same mistakes in their children as well.
There's no, passing them on genetically.
Yeah.
That would be quite interesting if we could do that in the human race.
Wouldn't it? Just think how quick we would evolve.
Well,
think how quickly we could evolve with
yes
that.
Yes and no. Yes and no. This opens up a really interesting discussion, in my opinion.
I still have a feeling we still make stupid mistakes.
I'm not a brain scientist. I love learning about these things. By the time you're old enough to have children, what information have you accrued that you could pass on that would be useful? It's not like the baby's going to come out knowing how to read. Right, because you learned how to read when you were a child, and now you can read it as an adult.
It's obviously because I had to give Harrison the whole history of Star Wars before, you know, he missed out a lot not being around.
You want your grandkids to be born with this compendium of Star Wars. Is that all you want?
It's exhausting having to teach him all this pop culture stuff.
It's exhausting. I think
just
it's
take it from me.
Part of the adventure.
Yeah.
I got that when we were traveling with Will and Julie a couple weeks ago. The original RoboCop came on, and they had seen some of the memes, but they hadn't ever seen the movie, so that was an interesting one.
Oh, right. Like, okay, yeah.
And although we didn't make it through the whole movie because we're all very tired from driving that day, they did, Will caught on to, I'd buy that for a dollar.
I know. I love that line.
I want something that goes really fast and gets really crappy gas mileage. Oh, you know, you mean like the 6000 SUX? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, what's funny is a lot of that pop culture stuff, you sometimes I just kind of take it for granted because I know you would get a lot of what we all experienced through that same time period. But then you make a joke and it's like, somebody and they go like, what? I'm like, oh gosh, I'm surprised, you know, I kind of surprised myself that you don't know what I'm talking about. So it's that common frame of reference, I guess.
Oh, and then try it on an international audience.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't work at all.
Well, sometimes it depends on what it is. Star Wars stuff, maybe.
If they watch the English one, sure.
Oh, well, there's that. Yeah, that's true.
Use the Force, Luke. It might not translate.
Maybe not. Yeah, maybe not.
All right.
But speaking of Star Wars.
There, nice segue.
Yeah. So this guy made the first in real life Star Wars proto saber, and it is very, very dangerous.
Yes, it is. Don't confuse the proto saber with the lightsaber. Now we're
That's
all familiar
right.
with the lightsaber. You take it out.
You go, yeah.
And so anyway, actually, it sounds more like this one. Right. You have an image in your mind. What's happening when we do that?
Yeah, I'm watching the animated GIF while you're playing those sounds is kind of neat. So here's the thing. I'm going to read this article from Nerdist.com. Here's the thing about lightsabers that isn't acknowledged enough. They're just as dangerous for their users as they are for their enemies facing them off, which isn't a big deal considering the elegant weapons of a more civilized age are fictional. But in real life, in fact, this fact becomes more frighteningly relevant. Checking out the Hacksmith's world's first proto-saber, and the Hacksmith is a YouTube channel. He built for a proof that is of that assessment that is very dangerous, as well as an understanding of why true energy sword is not nearly impossible to build, but is also unwise to wield.
Yes.
So those unfamiliar with the proto-saber is an archaic form of lightsaber, with the main difference being the two being the former's use of an external power pack.
Yep.
As the Wikipedia.
Wikipedia.
The Wikipedia is a Star Wars Wikipedia. The hilt of a proto-saber is connected via cable to an external power pack due to its limitations in power pack technology, which not only resulted in a relatively short operational time frame, but also, of course, limited mobility for its user. In the Star Wars universe, the proto-saber was first discovered during a mission to Mustafar when the Rebel Alliance found it in a container. The first appearance was in Star Wars, Tales of the Jedi, The Golden Age of the Sith. I started to say the Golden Book.
The little golden books for Star Wars. That's nice.
Yeah, you know, The Golden Age of the Sith, a comic book subseries.
Come on, pokey between, little puppy.
Yeah, ran between 96 and 97. So in the video, you can see him make the saber, and he talks about the whole thing. Anyway, go check it out. Like I said, he's got a whole video talking about it and demonstrating it, and it's really cool. But yes, it is very dangerous. Don't get your hand in it.
Yeah, it's got a whole bunch of batteries that are juiced up the amps to basically make almost like an incandescent light bulb without the bulb. It's just a big, hot rod. It's really what it is.
That's right. So it does look like a lightsaber.
They've got a nice hilt on there, and I'm glad. But even when he was holding it up, this thing's really hot. My face is about to burst into flame.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was the other thing. I remember him saying it was very hot.
I'm surprised his beard didn't singe at that point.
May have. But look at the styrofoam head or the whatever the head's made out of, wood or whatever. It was a mannequin foam head.
Yeah,
foam head, and he actually cuts through it pretty easy.
He does. It's got to burn its way through, so it's not like he just went. He does. You know, you can't just lance it off like they do with a real lightsaber.
That would be. Hey, I know it'd be extremely hot and dangerous, but wouldn't that be cool just to, you know, cut a couple things with it? Can you imagine seeing that? You're doing it. I don't know.
He had one of those like welder's gloves on. He says, It's funny because anything you touch bursts into flames immediately. He touches it and his hand's on fire. Ooh, ow, ooh, ah. Actually, the glove was on fire. His hand was not. But yeah, sure. Very dangerous. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with some stuff for you to remember when. Hang on.
Hi, this is Gil Gerard, and you're listening to Technorama.
Hi, I'm Nuke Choss, the host of Nutty Bites.
And hi, I'm Tech, Nutty's regular guest.
Or antagonist. Our podcast is like a call-in show where geeks get to debate topics about speculative fiction.
We don't really debate.
Sure we do. We debate topics such as lame superpowers, the best villains, and our favorite apocalypses.
We're more like rant, rave, and then have massive nerd rages.
People call in from all over the world, sometimes minor celebrities, and we've even had some supervillains show up.
Do you ever notice that you never have any superheroes or good guys?
I'm a good guy.
Compared to what?
Antagonist. Not really a guest. Nutty Bites. Nimlast.org.
That's an old promo. We got to get her to make a new one.
You know, as funny as, you know, we do the topic as Trek and you go ding.
Yes.
And then you hear Nutty and I can always think of the can opener. That's her little... ding for her website. Unless
Bartel's got the bathtub with, you know, the water and the Hey, quick shout out to the chat room. Let's see who's been trolling in our Technorama podcast Facebook page lately. Tim Elliott, Mark Trouble, CJ is out there, Mike Robeson, Michael King, thank you for joining us this evening. Me. If you're watching, give us a shout out.
I'm kind of in there.
Yeah.
Did you say John Clifford?
I did not see John Clifford. Did he say hello?
Jeremy Schaefer, former coworker. Jeremy Schaefer is in there. Mark Trouble. Yep. I don't know why we did. I wish they would give us some kind of interface where we could see the whole thing.
Exactly.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would. But we will sail on.
Ooh.
Join us every week every week that we do this. If you go to the Technorama podcast page on Facebook, you can get notifications when the show is live and join us. It's usually 9:30 Eastern time. So we look forward to seeing you there. There are weeks where family and jobs don't allow us, but we try our hardest. Like I said, we get about 30 to 35 in a year, which is
stupid day work.
And we appreciate it. So, speaking of sailing on, we have our Remember When stuff, which we should probably play something a little more dark and gruesome on this one. But who did the last story? You did the Proto Saber, so I'll take this one.
Yeah, go for it.
This is from express.co.uk, where a mummified captain was found in a ghost ship who had been sailing for 7 years after the poor man died. So, the man who appears to have been trying to make a desperate mayday call has been identified as German adventurer Manfred Fritz Borjat. Borjat, we'll work on that. And let me say that I do accept cookies, and I would like to continue to watch this webpage, which takes forever to load for whatever reason.
I was like, what are you talking about?
He is found by two fishermen at the weekend in the seas off Surigao del Sur province, about 50 miles from the Philippines. The gray corpse, which has been preserved by dry ocean winds, hot temperatures, and the salty air, you wouldn't think a mummy was possible at sea, would you?
No.
Was still sat at a desk near radio equipment on the 40-foot yacht called Sayo, which was partially submerged. And Donna has put up pictures of the man when he was alive and what he looks like today. So his decomposing body was found by photographs and a haunting letter to his wife, Claudia, who died from cancer in 2010. It was not a year. It is not this should be yet clear when he died, yeah. But no one has reported seeing him since 2009.
Hey, by the way, for reference, this article is from 2016, but I thought it was fascinating enough to throw it in the show.
Okay, and we have one even older than that next. Would you like to share with us our article from 1999?
Now, the reason I also put this one in here, obviously, it's a Remember When segment. But
remember Y2K?
Yeah, remember Y2K? I had to actually be at work during that for Y2K. How about you?
You mean when the clock actually rolled over?
When it actually rolled over.
No, I wasn't at work. We did our preparation so that nothing happened.
Well, we did. Well, that's right. We did also, and nothing really happened, but we were just trying to be there. We were asked to be there just to make sure. But anyway, it doesn't matter. We were there. They fed us and everything. We watched the fireworks from
around the world.
47th. No, we were sitting at the 47th floor in Charlotte. We saw the fireworks at eye level, which was kind of neat.
Well, I was watching them around the world. Like, you go on TV and it's you know, 4 a.m. Like, or whatever it is, and they say, hey.
I was watching the fireworks in Charlotte from eye level. You know, you
Pacific go, Island. That's kind of cool when you see them at eye level or below you.
Yeah, that's right. So anyway, so this is an interesting take on the whole 1999 thing, or the Y2K thing, that I hadn't considered before. So for hundreds of Western New Yorkers, the gift of longevity will present monumental problems sometime after the stroke of midnight on Friday. They've lived longer than their pre-engraved tombstones predicted.
Pre-engraved,
which is, I'm not sure why they would do that, but
well, often happens is you've got a spouse that died and you buy a plot for two or four people, whatever it is, your family plot.
And yeah, but you don't put the date on there for when you think you're going to die. Anyway, what happened was people die before they prepaid it, like, as you mentioned, and they had had 19, okay, whatever date we're going to put that part on there. Well, now they were lived in the 2000s, so they had to re-engrave it. So that was the problem. That's why I thought it was kind of funny.
You don't predict when you're going to die, but if, you know, grandpa's 85 and it's, you know, 1992, you go, well, you know, he's probably going to die in the 1900s at some point. Oh man, he made it.
Well, you know, we'd always focused on the computer problems we thought we were going to have or that were actually problems.
Here's some tombstones.
But here's some tombstones. This is actually stone tablets.
Yeah.
I thought it was an interesting take on the whole Y2K thing, and it was a problem for other non-technical stuff.
A tombstone isn't technical?
If you're dead, I don't think you're going to care.
Technology.
You don't have to re-engrave
it. You just say he lived to 19... and then put like plus 104.
You know what I would rather have on mine? If I had 19,
yes,
and then I died in 2000, I would have had them put a slash through the 19, just mark it, and then put the real date to the side
underneath.
Yeah,
died in 1999. Just kidding.
Yeah, just scratch it out and even handwrite it. You know, whatever.
Died in 1999. Anyway,
I just thought this was
zombie.
This is the kind of thing I didn't think of. Whenever I think of Y2K, I always think of something technical. Somebody tried to save a little bit of data and didn't put the four digit date, that kind of thing. Anyway, so
they had two digits already carved in. Oops,
the wrong two digits.
But if you want to solve that problem, you could go back in time and fix it. See how I did that segue?
Could you really do that?
Yes, because an astrophysicist says he now knows how to build a time machine. I thought we had that problem solved in 1985 with a DeLorean and a flux capacitor.
Yeah.
Well, his peers they're not convinced it'll work. So astrophysicist Ron Mallett believes he's found a way to travel back in time, well, at least theoretically. The tenured University of Connecticut physics professor recently told CNN that he's written a scientific equation that could serve as the foundation for an actual time machine. Oh, how I want some sound effects about Doc Brown right now.
1.21 gigawatts?
Where am I going to get that kind of power? He's even built a prototype device to illustrate a key component of his theory. Now I picture the little car going off the table in flames.
He's sitting there with the jumper cables in his hand.
Right.
He's ready to...
through the little model city and falls off the table and bursts into flames. Though Mallet's peers remain unconvinced at this time that his machine will ever come to fruition. To understand Mallet's machine, you need to know the basics of Albert Einstein's theory of special relativity, which most of us don't. But it states that time accelerates or decelerates depending on the speed at which an object is moving. Based on that theory, if a person in a spaceship traveling near the speed of light, time would pass more slowly for them than it would for someone who remained here on Earth. Essentially, the astronaut could zip around space for less than a week, and when they returned to Earth, 10 years would have passed for the people on Earth, making it seem as though the astronaut had done time travel. Mm-hmm. But while most physicists accept that skipping forward in time in that way is probably possible, time traveling to the past is a whole other issue. And one Mallet thinks he could solve using lasers. Yes, lasers solve everything.
You got to use air quotes.
As the astrophysicist explained to CNN, his idea for time machine hinges upon another Einstein theory, the general theory of relativity. According to that theory, massive objects bend space-time, an effect we perceive as gravity. And the stronger the gravity, the slower time passes. Go watch, what was that space movie where they went down to the planet near a black hole?
They went down to the planet near a black hole.
Yes, the movie in the last, what, 4 or 5 years?
Event Horizon?
No. I always want to say Inception, but it's not Inception. That's the dream.
Starts
with an I. I'm not thinking of it right now.
You Interstellar.
Know, Interstellar, yes. Thank you. It's in the right category anyway.
Well, when it's one of those things, isn't you? You mention it, and my mind goes blank trying to look up the name myself.
real movie that sticks out in my mind. It was good until the end, as everybody says. Okay, anyway, if you can bend space, there's a possibility you are twisting space. Mm-hmm. Mallet told CNN. In Einstein's theory, what we call space also involves time. That's why it's called space-time. Scientists, real good. Whatever it is you do to space also happens to time. He believes it's theoretically possible to twist time into a loop that would allow for time travel to the past. He's even built a prototype showing how lasers might help achieve this goal. By studying the type of gravitational field, this is a quote, by studying the type of gravitational field that was produced by a ring laser, Mallet told CNN, this could lead to a new way of looking at the possibility of time machine based on a circulating beam of light. All right. We'll keep you posted. Hey, again, this is real early.
But here's the thing. He says you can only go back as far as when you first used the machine.
Because that's where you start the loop.
Yeah, that's where you start the loop.
Okay.
With using gravity to slow down time, you can only go back as far. You could send information back. You can't like travel back, but you can send information back to yourself. Only as far as when you first used the machine.
So you could use the machine today and keep using it for 30 years and go, what stock should I buy?
I was going to say, send it like a little stock ticker. Like, you know, right. What was it? That they had on the Addams Family. He goes,
Yeah, but the Addams Family, he had like amalgamated dust and consolidated lint or something. They were really bizarre Addams Family type stocks. I don't know. I was thinking about that the other day, but okay. Funny to bring that up. We've been working together way too long, if that's what crossed our mind.
At least 15 years.
Let's do the Patreon thank you, because we have a new Patreon member. Thank you to you. You guys made 2019 financially possible. We were in the black the whole year financially. Bandwidth, hosting, software upgrades. It's amazing. Thank you. And we look forward to doing that again in 2020, because you honestly keep this podcast going. We're just here to be smart Alex the whole time. Okay, we find some stories and we
You're the enabler.
We know how to make an MP3 file. But it's thanks to people like Kyle Nishioka, Abner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Mike Wills, Megapodtastic, Night Gig Studios, Gary Lindros, yes, the one who wants more talk about peas for some reason.
Yeah.
John Clifford, Leon, John Noble, Chris
MC. I'm not
MC.
Saying it.
Nah, Donna's told us that joke's worn out and needs to move on.
Okay.
Alexis Duran, okay. Saturday Morning Media, Steve Therian, Jorge Schwarwin and the Postcard Man, John Miller Jr., Amber Elstad, Harold McKinstry, Amy Bowen, Denise Inglis, thank you very much to everybody. Stephen Wetchy. Are you going to say that
one?
I'm
not going to do that joke either. No. Well, yeah,
she said that one was still okay for a while.
Oh, Wetchy!
There you go.
Oh, did she? Did she really say that?
She's giving us a head nod, yes.
Okay, all right.
Dean Jensen, Dandy Mancoyer. We have to come up with some new jokes, man. And Calf One, Matt Baum, Christina, and our newest, he's done with the training program.
Oh.
He's moved out of the guest house, Brian Brown.
Hey, I like that he's still paying you.
I don't know if I pressured him into something today, but I got this notice on my phone that says, you have money in your PayPal account. From Brian Brown. I said, what's the money for? And he said, cleaning up the guest house, getting the cat stank out of the house. And I went, oh, okay. Well, I appreciate that because originally I thought you were just giving us a really big Technorama donation.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. Then an hour later, this shows up. Like,
oh,
okay.
Okay. All right. Cool. Thanks, Brian. You're good in my book again.
Again? Was yeah. Was he on the bad list for a while?
I'm just making him feel better.
If you want to be part of this hysterical fun, maybe even get a meme after your name, go over to
and until Donna gives us the
let us know if you don't want a meme after your name. Go over to patreon.com/technoramapodcast. You could obviously go to our Technorama page at chuckchat.com/technorama and click the link there, which will take you same place. Not only do these people get their name enshrined on the show, but they also get special content that's recorded right after this. And we send it to them in a private feed. And they
special
get
special being the operative word there.
Because maybe Brian misses those discussions we have after the show and just wants to be part of that again. I feel like he's used up the whole song. We're going to need a longer song if we get more Patreon people.
You know what Brian can actually do? He can actually listen to our Patreon, our parody show.
Yes. That's what we call the Patreon shows, our parody. Yeah.
He can record his own sidetrack. And, you know, so it's like a director's commentary. We'll post that too.
He's going to talk back. He's going to MST the thing.
I think we're going to time travel in our Patreon show. That's
all you'd hear back is, no, Chuck, that's a bad idea.
Yeah, right.
All right, one final thing you found at the last minute.
I did, and I thought this was interesting enough to throw in here. But there was you can go look at the pictures and stuff. There's not much to it, but this is a Wikipedia article talking about Capitol Hill's mystery soda machine.
This is not the government Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., by the way.
No, it's the one in Seattle. But this is a vending machine in Capitol Hill, Seattle, that has been operational since the late 1990s.
Actually, I think this time machine guy sent it back.
You know what? I bet those stories are related.
I'll bet they are.
So it is unknown who actually stocks the machine. So the description of the article says a drink could be chosen in one of the mystery buttons. And yes, the buttons
there's
do say
six
mystery.
Buttons labeled question mark mystery. And it's the font is all up and down. It almost looks like a ransom note.
It does. There's mystery buttons. And when the dispensed drinks were rare cans, like not those ordinary available U.S. cans or anything, but these are drinks that have not been circulated since the 80s.
There's a QR code on it, so it's from the future.
Right.
And it says it's a 75 cents on the machine on the picture, but yet the Wikipedia page says $1. So what's the real cost here, people?
I don't know. But it had different examples of some of the drinks were Mountain Dew Whiteout, which I don't think I've ever seen, a raspberry-flavored Nestea Brisk, a Hawaiian Punch, and a Grape Fanta.
Now, and I love this history segment. In June 2018, the machine disappeared, and a message was posted on the machine's Facebook page stating, "Going for a walk. Need to find myself. Maybe take a shower, even." A note was taped to the wall, to the rail where the machine used to be. "Went for a walk." During this time, the Facebook page featured photoshopped images of the soda machine in various places around the globe.
That's pretty funny. Yeah. So, and by the way, the locksmith, I assume this is in front of a locksmith shop, says in front of his business is where the machine stood. He claims to have no knowledge of who operated it.
Uh-huh.
Mm.
So this soda machine has a Wikipedia page, but we don't. Our podcast doesn't.
And we got plenty of mystery buttons to push, let me tell you.
There's a sound bite.
Yeah.
Alrighty, our question of the week. That brings us to near the end of the show. Our penultimate thing we want to tell you is, our question of the week is, you gain the ability to stop time. After stopping time, what's the first thing you're going to do? Learn how to restart it, maybe?
Drink all the machines out of that. The drinks out of that machine.
Is time truly stopped, or are you just moving really fast?
That's right.
Hmm. All right, that's what we're going to post to social media next week. We want to hear from you. We also want to hear from you if you've got something other than to answer that question. Go over to our listener line, 707-530-2428. That's the one that Gary keeps calling. I know it still works. Mm-hmm. 707-530-CHAT is how you can get a hold of us, or email us, technorama@chuckchat.com. You can also find all of our social media presence and whatnot. Mm. Might as well play the song because it's the end of the
show.
Yes?
That should be the first thing you do when stopping time is make some phone calls and call us.
How would you call us if you stopped time? If time was truly stopped, the electrons wouldn't be moving.
Look,
for
if you're
else.
Stopping time, you can figure out anything.
I think we're getting a little hurdy brain here.
All right, let's get out of here.
Okay. Chuckchat.com is where you want to go. Click that Technorama link and find all those old shows. There's theoretically 586 of them out there, but we're going to make sure that they are, because
there's at least 582, but there's probably six of them.
We're trying to go through the old archives and find those. But anyway, we want to hear from you. Until next time, it's been fun this time. And
this time, as opposed to,
we'll talk to you again real soon. Give them a binary high five, Craig.
All right. 101, everybody.